we started our work because we had to work to live. Later on, we find inspiration in something like this and we lived to work.
The automotive industry has seen a lot of changes. From conception, the world has seen a lot of different cars in a lot of different models and periods in time. Think of Ford in the 50s and its assembly lines. Everybody wanted a car. It was the staple of class and luxury, and these days it still is. But these days, the new IT car isn't running by gas or easily assembled in 3 hours part by part. There's a lot more involved now. You have technology that allows cars to drive themselves. And the way the industry's moving, these cars will be the way of the future. And it will change the way we interact with the spaces around us. This industry is constantly going through advancement. People who have been a part of it for a long time can speak to the impact of these changes.
Now, there happened a lot of things. There happened a lot of investigations in the art of drivetrains of the cars, the way of gasoline to what we call diesel at Germany, and then later on the discussion with electrical cars and the competition with Tesla, what we have seen here in Europe. It was a lot of things we moved forward. And the second thing was the impressive improvement in electronics inside of the cars and the assistance systems going more and more in the direction of assisted and autonomous driving. I think this is the most we could see in the last 10 years.
That's Gernot Spiegelberg. He may sound a bit familiar if you're a longtime listener of the show. We've spoken to him before on the Future Car podcast, and he's back. Gernot has worked in this industry for over 10 years, and his current role at Siemens Corporate Research Offices in Germany is coming to a close. He's finally retiring. But before he leaves Siemens, we wanted to chat with him one more time. We wanted to know, after all the work he's done and seen, where he thinks this industry's headed.
Do you think Tesla played a key part in driving electromobility in Europe?
Yes, I think so. Because at the beginning, it was a complete new approach of a newcomer, and the German and European automotive industry didn't think that such a newcomer can pass by the existing and the whole automotive industry by doing a new approach in development and recreation of car concepts. But they did it very, very consequently. What we can see today is they have drivetrain, they have an energy management, they have a battery construction, which really convince now the customers.
Would you personally buy a Tesla, or do you personally own an electric car now?
No, I don't do, because at that time I made the decision whether I should have a Tesla or I should have another car, depending on the fact that I have to tow my ship with 2.5 tons of weight. And at that time, I tried to get a Tesla Model S, but there's no opportunity to construct a tow bar on this. And therefore, there was no decision to make this as my business car. But I would try to have one.
Yeah, it sounds like if you could put a tow bar on a Tesla, you would be converted over to the electric car world then and probably never buy another combustion engine car again. Is that right?
That's right. From my private ownership, the next car I will buy is an electrical car.
Think about it. Having a Tesla in your driveway would be pretty cool, but the idea of even owning cars may be less likely in the future. There's a chance at owning cars. Having the keys to your own self-driving ride may be a thing of the past. To be honest, though, we're not completely sure.
You know, another topic that comes up when it comes to autonomous cars and connected cars is related to the accessibility of transportation. Transportation is really, really important. The more access you have to transportation, the easier it is to find a job, or the easier it might be to get to a place where you can get a good or a better education. Do you think that this technology can be used to somehow equalize or have better equality in how you can access transportation? So it's not just for those that can afford it the most, but it becomes something that more people can afford.
Yes, what we think is there is a special relationship. Today's cars in private ownership will be used only 5% of lifetime, and 95% they will stand still because they are not used. In future time, with autonomous cars, we will move more and more in the direction of affordable mobility on demand. This is a service where you can use a car which will be used by all passengers with a use time of 80% of lifetime. Therefore, the passenger transportation will be much cheaper than with today person or private possessed cars. And I think, therefore, it will be affordable for much more people than today. And what I think is, connected to your Outlook calendar, service provider will give you a special service which will service you exactly second-wise when you need this demand.
You know, Airbnb has done some very interesting things to the hotel business where you're able to rent out your home or your apartment when you're not in it. And certainly, we're not going to suddenly be in a world that's just mobility as a service. But what do you think about the possibility of renting out your own car to other people? It's almost like creating your own mobility as a service business with your personal car, because if it's sitting around 80-90% of the time not doing anything, why not rent it out? Do you think that's a possibility?
It may be, but I think it will be only an intermediate state. It will be the move from today, private ownership of a car, to full mobility as a service, where the car is not in private ownership and will be rented to others. It will be controlled and it will be rented from a mobility provider. I don't think that the mobility provider does it like Airbnb with cars in private ownership and will rent it to other people. I think the efficiency at the end of the day will not be good enough with a complete car fleet of a mobility provider who does this professionally.
So it sounds like if you ever did buy that Tesla S with the tow bar, if you could ever buy that, I have no chance of renting that from you. Is that true?
At the beginning, it may be that I will do so. But at the end, perhaps at the beginning, I buy my Tesla and I will rent it to others to earn a little bit money. But if this concept is running well, why should I buy my Tesla? Then I rent the Tesla from others. Then I don't have to pay for a private car. And the end of this discussion will be nobody will buy his car. And we have this situation that a mobility provider will send you the service for mobility on demand based on your Outlook calendar.
Can you take a step back and tell us a little bit of what do you think a city's going to look like in 30 or 40 or 50 years?
This is too far away because I can think about the next 20 years because this is a distance which I can oversee what can happen here. What I think is the cities have to be much greener than today, and the cities have to get rid of the enormous space for our traffic inside of cities. Have a view from the air when you touch down with an aircraft in Los Angeles, for example. It's a disaster what you can see there in traffic jam and traffic lines everywhere. It's so much filled with streets and lines. This should be over in the next, I think, 20, 30 years, because I think especially the parking places have to be thrown away by doing something like mobility as a service where cars are running, not cars are parking. And therefore, half of the traffic space we have today, we can get back for greener places or for other approach than we have today. The second is, I think we should not travel so much in the future than we do today. With new technologies in digitization and with connectivity we have today, we can do homework, we can go to places where we don't have to be in reality. We can do this by simulation, we can travel by sending information, not sending our body, and therefore we don't need so much travel place than we have today. I think the cities will get much greener than today.
Since we won't be traveling as much, will we be able to reduce the number of roads we have, do you think? And not only eliminate parking, but maybe eliminate the roads that are needed for the car since we won't be moving around as much?
I think, as you mentioned before, some of these roads will be placed as subways. Something like this should be done. If we have the same mobility amount than today, we cannot decrease the traffic lines because the same mobility task needs the same travel place. We have to think regarding how can we change the way of moving we are doing today. How can we travel inside of cities? Do we have this over? Do we have this in underline? Or do we have this over the surface? What I don't really believe in is a lot of amount of air taxis in one city. This is a little bit like a movie for the future, like The Fifth Element. There are a lot of cars traveling around in several levels. Through these are not streets, these are air levels crossing between the buildings. I don't believe in such a disaster we will get in this. And I don't think with air taxis we will have this in the future.
You don't think that there might be a personal drone that would take you around, maybe a larger version of some of those little drones that people fly around now? Why wouldn't something like that work?
It will work, but I think only on dedicated airlines. If you want to go from the middle of the city to an airport, it may be an opportunity. But for the traveling inside of cities, for the whole urban transportation of the people there, it will be too much traffic. And I think this will not be the solution of the future. What we can see today is in Palo Alto in Brasilia, there are a lot of helicopters traveling. But it's expensive, and they do so because the traffic and the traffic jam in the streets is too much, and the crime in this area is too much. Therefore, businessmen are traveling by helicopters. But I think this is not the common sense of or the solution for the whole population. I don't think so.
So you've got these drones probably taken from the city to the airport where you can do longer distance travel. But inside the city, you know, I think it's interesting, this idea of taking cars, be they shuttles or personal cars, whatever it might be, and putting them underground. Because if you put them underground, you don't have people crossing the streets, animals, dogs and cats, whatever it might be. That would also make the whole problem of trying to control and make autonomous cars safer a lot easier, don't you think?
Yes, I think with autonomous cars, we will get rid of a lot of disaster and traffic jam and so on. But there's another point. I think we can decrease the amount of traffic in cities a lot. Today, we have a lot of cars where only one single person is sitting in one car. And this increases the traffic a lot we have today. If you bundle people in one device and you organize the travel by a special service where you can bring several people together in one transportation device, it will decrease the amount of devices in our streets a lot.
I think one of the interesting projects that you worked on was a single person transport device. We lovingly call it the egg. It looks like it has an egg shape. It's vertical when you get in. and then it drops down just a little bit. It's three wheels and it covers you, so it's not like a bicycle, so you're completely covered. And this device, then, it can quickly move you from one place to another.
Yes, I have done this. This is a so-called e-seater because it's an electrically driven system, which is a seat which can be driven electrically, and therefore it's an e-seater. It's now designed for two persons sitting side by side. This system can be folded that you can enter and you can exit in a very convenient way. But very important is you can enter with this every building. So the system can bring you to the train and to the plane, to the gate of the plane inside of buildings. And therefore, I think it's a good step to combine intermodal traffic for mobility as a service.
So it could move you around on the street, go through a door, enter into the airport, and take you right to the gate. That's what you're suggesting.
That's right. And bring you to the train exactly where the train stops. And when you have entered the train, the car will turn around, and driven by artificial intelligence and autonomous driving, he will move to the next customer and to the next passenger.
You know, one thing about autonomous cars is that it's going to make travel more affordable. And if it becomes more affordable, then the consequence of that could be that more people will be able to travel. And that would have a negative effect on traffic. But an interesting thing about the concept you're just describing is the amount of space per person on the street would be very, very small. So, for instance, if you have a bus and it's full of people, the amount of space per person is actually small. But a bus that's empty is actually quite bad, or a regular sedan with just the drivers is bad. Do you think that in order to reduce traffic, that maybe in the future there might be a charge that's based on how much space you actually take on a street per person, say, to move from one point to another?
You think we have modularized systems which will be used depending on the amount of people which have to be transported?
Yeah, could you, if you had a way of knowing that, then there would be an incentive to either travel with other people or travel on a mode where you just don't take a lot of space on the road. For instance, the machine that you were just describing.
Yes, you can do this by different prices. If you want to have more space, you have to pay a little bit more money for that. This is we have today. If you have your personal taxi, you have a little bit more space in the taxi, but you have to pay a little bit more price for this. But what I think is, to decrease the traffic jam, you should move the travel amount or the number of people from the spots of traffic jam to the time where the traffic line is not so much used. And you can do this by a special transportation fee. The transportation fee is higher if the traffic jam is bigger, and the transportation fee is lower if the traffic jam is not there. This is the kind in Singapore the government is controlling the traffic.
These ideas about different modes of transportation have the potential to change the spaces around us. As a result, we might have to alter these spaces in order to better fit these new transportation tools.
You mentioned earlier when we were talking about your one-man vehicle. What was the name of that vehicle? What did you call it?
It was called the e-seater.
The e-seater.
Yeah, the e-seater, because it's a seat which runs, therefore it's a seater, and it's an e-seater because it's electrified.
Oh, interesting. So it's basically a mobile seat that protects you from the elements and the rain, and it can run on the street, and it can run inside a building, which is very, very interesting, because in that vision, it seems like there could be a class of vehicles that really start to change not only the design of the streets and what's outside in a city, but it'll probably impact the design of the buildings themselves or the airports.
I think so. Regarding the advantage you should get from mobility as a service, where you will be transported from A to B, and it doesn't depend on where A is or where B is and when you have to be transported. Therefore, you have to combine everything in the best manner.
You know, there's a lot of people that are in the business of moving you around or moving packages around, checking you when you come in and out of a building, whatever it might be. And it seems like a lot of those things can become automated, especially if, for instance, your e-seater is connected and it knows who you are. So the nature of work itself is going to change. How do you think this is going overall going to impact the types of jobs that people have in the future?
I don't know really whether the type of jobs will change. This depends on how much automation we will get in the future, how much artificial intelligence will step into directions or into jobs we do today with human beings. It can be made by machines or by artificial intelligence. This is the first we have to think about. The second is how we will work. And I think everything where we have to be genius, where we have to think in designing, into creating new things different than they have been before, this will be made by people. And if machines are too expensive, people will do the work furthermore.
Siemens plays a big role in moving the industry forward. We have different divisions and teams in different parts of the world working towards a future with future cars. I asked Gernot during his time at Siemens, what does he think we can do at Siemens in the future to continue moving forward?
As you're getting ready here to leave Siemens, what role do you think Siemens is going to play in making this future reality, this future vision come true? How much can they do on their own? How much? There's so many divisions within Siemens, divisions related to mobility, divisions related to healthcare, to buildings, but I'm sure they can't do it all. What can they do? Who should they partner with? What groups of companies will have to join with Siemens to make this a reality in the future? This vision you've been talking about.
What I think is the new challenges which we have to bring forward in the future are too big for one company. It doesn't matter how big the company may be over the world. I think competition and cooperation is very, very important in the future. Therefore, I think Siemens should do what Siemens can do in the best way. Siemens should show that we bring big technologies for making life in our Earth in a sustainable way based on technologies for energy, for water generation. I think it's very, very important. And for every kind of technology which can bring social justice in the best manner that we can bring freedom to this world. And freedom to this world is a question of social justice and is a question of technology to support this. This can be done by Siemens with steps in technologies. But to combine then this together to the best lifestyle for people, for affordable lifestyle of people, cooperation should be done, like, for example, mobility as a service. Siemens can do a lot of things in energy generation. They can do a lot of things in producing rolling stocks like trains and something like this, but it's not enough. For mobility as a service, there has to be a cooperation with a logistic provider who will manage this all, and Siemens is not doing this.
Who do you think those partners would be to complement the capability of Siemens?
A lot of ways are now ongoing, or I see corporations who are doing this. For example, in America, such a logistic provider could be Amazon. In the Asian market, it could be Alibaba. They are going in this direction. And I think in Europe or in Germany, it can be DHL. It should be a provider for logistics who does this today, but they should do this in a broader approach.
Do you think that big corporations, and not just naming Siemens, but corporations of that size that are, in this case, they're in a mode where they could cooperate, but in some ways, maybe they even compete. It's hard to say. Do you think it's possible to get them to work together? How do you do that?
I think very important for this is to have a broader vision in what kind of lifestyle we want to live in the future. And based on this, we should extract the puzzle stones we need for this. Parts of these puzzle stones can be made with big companies, but not the whole vision. And I think to make the whole vision come into reality, we have to cooperate. But everybody of this cooperation partners has to believe into this future vision.
Yeah, it's creating a consensus or an excitement, a passion for where to go.
That's right. You're completely, I agree with this. Yes.
Well, what advice would you give Siemens as before you leave here, if you could give Siemens one big piece of advice or a couple of points, what would it be that they should do or continue to do or do better or change so that they can be better prepared for this future world we've been talking about?
It would be an ideologic approach, I think. In our advertisement and in our stakeholder management, we very, very often have the sentences, we make a good business, we make a good EBIT, and therefore we are a good company. What my intention would be, and this will be increase the spirit of our employees and our outside view in the society, would be if we present ourselves in why we do things and how we make the lifestyle of the people better for a sustainable world. And if we show this in the best way, the stakeholders will believe, and with this, we could earn the best way of money. I would turn the argumentation a little bit around to have a good story. And I see that Elon Musk with his Tesla, with his Hyperloop, with his SpaceX, he has at any time a good story. And I think first the good story has to be, and then the technology will count, not the other way around. The feeling I have now is, and what I have learned is, it's very important to have a good way of living and to do a good work in your business and in your job. But at the end of the day, I've learned the most effect for your own behavior and for your own feeling would be not to make your work in the best manner, but to work in the best manner with your team and with your colleagues. Because the best you can do is to go home at the evening and you have a good feeling because it was a good teamwork over the day. And in Siemens, we have so much people, so much nice people with good spirit, with good motivation. If we come into the direction that we want to increase the behavior and the teamwork with our colleagues, much more than to go into competition with several offices inside of Siemens, it would be a much better approach. And what I see now is, if I go into my retirement, I will not go in retirement to do nothing. But now I can do it in that manner I want to do that, with my own opportunities and own opinions. And this would be a nice, very, very nice approach and very nice opportunity I have in the future.
What are you looking forward to the most about your retirement? What are you looking forward to do now that you don't have to go to work?
The first I want to do is to see a little bit more of the world with my wife, because I was very, very busy over the last years traveling for the company. I have seen a lot of places all over the world, but I haven't really been there because I went for business from one place to the other and I had no time to see the world how it is in reality. I want to go a little bit more in this direction. And later on, I want to be open for any kind of questions. When I am asked, Gernot, what do you think regarding on the experience you got during your business time and your time where you have been busy in your office and traveling for the company? What is your suggestion we can do better? What are the main focus we have to deal with? Is this only technology, or are there some other things we have to think about, we have to pay in attention?
Well, Gernot, thank you so much for taking time in what I'm sure must be very, very busy days in your last days here at Siemens. And also thank you for all the years that you've dedicated to Siemens and all the things that you've done. And we wish you all the luck in your retirement, and I'm sure we'll stay in touch in the future. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you very much for everything, Ed.
Thanks for joining us today. And for more, visit Siemens PLM Software online. Siemens PLM Software is a world-leading provider of product lifecycle management and manufacturing operations management software. We help thousands of companies realize innovation by optimizing their processes from planning and development through manufacturing, production, and support.